if your brand or if your destination, if you're feeling that you have a hard time standing out from the rest of the crowd, our mantra is do what everybody else is not doing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Stoker. We've got a great show for you today, one that I've been excited about doing for a long time. We've got one of our creative directors at Relic with us today. His name is James Gibson. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. I'm very glad to be here.
Oh, well, I'm glad to have you. And you know, we get to talk often just as coworkers and going back and forth on different projects, but this will be more of kind of a philosophical discussion here for us, James.
I love it.
Well, hey, we want to get to know you a little bit. So why don't we first have you just tell us a little bit about, you know, your dream destination. And if you could go anywhere in the world, where would that be?
Oh, yeah. You know, travel for me is really interesting in that I hate the actual act of getting there, like all the plane rides and everything like that. But once I'm there, I love the experience. And so for me, the destination really has to be worth all of the hassles of those plane rides and everything. But one place that I'd love to go is Japan.
Japan? And
just because...
That's a long plane ride, James.
Yeah, I know. But that's the thing. I think it's worth that plane ride just because what I find fascinating is what is... weird here that is completely normal there, and what is normal there that would be completely weird here, right? I love kind
Give
of
me an example of a couple of those, James.
Well, number one is I'm fascinated by the vending machine culture in Japan. And I know that sounds weird, but
I don't know that I've ever even heard anyone say the words together, vending machine culture.
Yeah. And it's fascinating. I mean, we have vending machines, and this is something that's just completely weird, right? But we have just standard vending machines here. But in Japan, they vending machine. I don't know if that's a verb, but they vending machine everything, down to your meals, down to just anything that your groceries, down to toys, and they're everywhere. And so I'm just fascinated by it. That's a weird thing that you wouldn't actually see here.
Yeah.
But other stuff like that, I think that's fascinating. And it's good. I think it's good for somebody just kind of be like, oh, that's weird. I never really thought of things like that. And you kind of adjusting your view of the world, I think, is really important.
Yeah. Maybe what we should do, James, is put together like an international vending machine tour, right? Or itinerary where we take you to the best vending machine destinations around the world.
No, I think that'd be awesome. And I actually watched a documentary one time where someone traveled to Japan and they lived off of vending machines entirely, down from their lodging to their dining. And I mean, they rented their hotel through a vending machine.
No
way. And obviously
way.
It was a kind of a kiosk where you do it, but they would give the vending machine, vended them a key, and they never interacted with somebody at all. So I found that fascinating.
That is fascinating. What, okay, other than vending machine culture, what is it about Japan that is kind of normal for them and weird for us that you're kind of interested in experiencing?
Another part I think has to do with my career. I watched the documentary Hero Dreams of Sushi, and if you guys haven't seen it, I would highly recommend it. And in Japanese culture, they have this kind of concept that you fall in love with your job rather than you kind of searching around and hoping to find a job that you love. So their entire culture it follows around this concept of, even if you hate what you do, essentially you learn to love it through focus and discipline. And it's really inspiring, because in American culture, I think we have this kind of idea that you either love your job or don't, and it's kind of passive. But I love the idea of you making the active decision to fall in love with your job through kind of, I guess, trial and tribulation, you would say. And so it follows the top sushi maker in the world, and they have this one guy who makes the egg, and he's been making this egg cake for, I guess, 5 to 10 years. And he still hasn't gotten it right. And he's like, well, hopefully by year 15,
No
way. I would have gotten this egg cake right. But his whole mindset was just like finding this purpose and meaning and really perfecting this craft over 15 years and really falling in love with it. And so I found that fascinating. And that entire idea, I think, is ubiquitous across the culture. Just this focus and discipline and dedication to craft, and being a craftsman myself, I think in my career, I love that aspect of things. How you can see it in all of their design. You walk around, like their signs and even their mailboxes. If you look at a Japanese mailbox, ours are pretty utilitarian, right? It's just a place to put mail. But a Japanese mailbox is extremely ornate and is full of craftsmanship. And you can tell there's a human behind it and someone cared about it. And so stuff like that, I mean, it's fascinating. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's interesting. That's we've heard Japan on the show a lot, but you have one of the most unique takes on Japan that I think I've heard. It's really cool to hear how different parts of different destinations appeal to different people. Let's talk about your favorite trip you've ever been on, James. What is your favorite destination?
You know, it's funny. I think, I grew up in New Jersey and I don't get to see my family pretty often. And so when I do get to see them, I think that's one of my favorite times. And so we try to make it a tradition of getting together maybe once every year, maybe once every 2 years. And the place that we've kind of found that is the best place to get together is Park City. And I love it just because my family is extremely competitive. I think like many families are. And so my 70-year-old dad and my sister and her husband will all go to the Park City tennis courts and we'll play each other. And there's full of trash talk, but it's fun. And it's surrounded in a beautiful setting right below Park City Main Street. And we'll go down to the, after the game, we'll go and get ice cream from Park City Main Street. And it's just become this highlight that I look forward to of kind of going to that area and spending time together. So
nice. So the competitive tennis culture in Park City has really appealed to you, sticking with our vending machine culture paradigm there.
and it's funny because I should preface, we're not good at all. I mean, my family is not a family of athletes, but we play kind of basically like we play ping pong. None of us have training at all. But we love the aspect of competing against each other. And I'm sure if somebody married into the family that actually was trained at tennis, they would kill us all. But yeah.
Yeah, the one thing more interesting than competitive tennis is competitive bad tennis, right? So that could be kind of fun to watch. That's a spectator sport. Well, James, I've known you now for almost 6 years, I think, and we've been working together a long time. We've had a lot of fun together, and I'd love to have our audience have the chance to get to know you a little bit. So tell me, give us just the brief background of who you are and how you ended up where you are today.
Yeah, so I got a pretty simple story. I'm a Jersey kid, born and raised in New Jersey, and I was always drawn just to kind of creative things and drawing. I spent most of my time growing up just in my room drawing. And I love that aspect of things. And I eventually moved out west to go to college. And, I was in college and I was studying design. And I'm like, man, I wish I could use my kind of love for drawing and animation just a little bit more, just because it wasn't emphasized in graphic design as much. And so I transferred to BYU, where their animation program was really kind of under the tutelage of Pixar and DreamWorks. And so I transferred down there and studied animation down at BYU. And so I had this kind of pseudo design animation background. And I love it just because I think, my favorite movie of all time is Finding Nemo. A lot of people might be thrown off about that, but really, I've never had a movie emotionally affect me as much as that one did. I think it's self-evidently beautiful and the music is beautifully composed. And as my favorite composer, Thomas Newman, composed it. But the entire story, I think, is extremely beautiful in the fact that the father story essentially going across the entire world, battling all these trials just to find his son.
Yeah.
Is emotionally resonated with me on a really deep level. And it just, I love the idea of someone will go into the, go outside of their comfort zone and face the unknown because of something they care about. I love that message. So anyway, I got sidetracked by Finding Nemo, but
I love it so much. Finding Nemo hasn't come up on the show yet. So this is original content here. I like it.
But yeah, I came out of college and I didn't think I would stay in Utah. I thought I would see myself someplace in California or like Austin, Texas, or, you know, Portland, because those are kind of hot spots for creativity around the U.S. But I found a great job here at Relic, and I got to do literally all the things that I love, down from animation, illustration to design, and it's been extremely rewarding. So, yeah.
Well, and you know, one of the things that we found quickly as you came in is this talent that you have for illustration and animation. And it was back when we were pretty early on in our tourism arc, right, of how long we've been in the industry. And we had a couple of opportunities to do some unique campaigns, and you were assigned to those campaigns because of your illustration and animation and creativity talents. And I want to talk about a couple of those campaigns, because really I think they were some of the campaigns that paved the way for what we've achieved in tourism today. I'd love to have you talk about those projects.
Yeah. Well, the first one that comes to mind is Uinta County in Dinosaur Land, where we created an entire world, so to say. And it's come a long way through the years. We started out with two characters, and the two characters are Vern and Al. And we thought that'd be a fun little playoff of the fact that Dinosaur Land is in Vernal, Utah. And so that was fun in and by itself. But we created this campaign called The Origin of Adventure, kind of saying that, you know, Dinosaur Land really is the first place of adventure where adventure started. And so we love the idea of come to the origin of that adventure with dinosaurs.
Yeah. And I always looked at that campaign as, you know, the reason you find all the dinosaur bones there is because there's so much fun stuff to do. The dinosaurs wanted to live there.
Yeah. <You know?
laughs> And so we call it the origin of adventure because they literally wanted to go live there to have a good time. Such a fun campaign. Anyway, sorry, I interrupted you.
No. And, the entire point was, how can we really make this appeal to families? Because we noticed that through our analytics and target audience, that families were coming to Dinosaur Land. And we thought, how can we go all in on families? And really going off of the Pixar Disney model, we just went all in on just kind of creating characters that resonated with kids and families, really involving humor. And, we created a children's book that we thought that children would genuinely want to read. And it's funny. One of our employees, they said they read the children's book to their kid. And at the end of the book, that we have a couple of advertisements kind of showing Dinosaur Land and all the places they can go. And the kid was like, "What? This is an ad?" And I love that, just because they were lost in the story. And I think that was the goal with the campaign, to really make the destination come to life, but really make these characters something that these kids and these families can connect with. Because, you know, I looked at Disneyland and I looked at Disney World, and I saw, and I'm sure Adam, you can resonate with this as well. You look at a child's face when they meet their character hero at Disney World, and they can't tell, they don't know if it's real or not, but to them, it's extremely real. This character in front of them and the relationship that they formed through the movies that they watched is extremely real.
Yeah.
And it's powerful. Yeah. So,
James, I'll never forget watching my daughter at Disneyland when they were doing the character parade, and Elsa looks down at her, blows her a kiss, and waves at her. And it's like, it was a dad moment. It was a pretty awesome dad moment, because I could just see the happiness, you know, exactly what you're talking about. I want to back up a little bit though, James, because you know, one of the reasons we landed on illustration for this campaign is that the Wall of Bones in Dinosaur National Monument is such an amazing attraction. I mean, it's this wall on the side of a mountain where they've actually carved out and found hundreds and maybe even thousands of dinosaur bones in this one rock quarry. But the lighting sucks, for lack of a better description. And anytime you try to photograph it, it just doesn't capture what the Wall of Bones actually is. And then you try to put a bad photo in a good ad, and it just doesn't have that appeal or connection that you're looking for. And that's really what led us down the path to illustration, right?
Oh, yeah. And there are multiple aspects to it. And one of the fascinating things about the Wall of Bones is that when you go to the Wall of Bones, you're not just looking at this Wall of Bones, but you're imagining, how did they get there? You're creating this narrative in your mind, right? Of like, who were these dinosaurs? What were their lives are like? And you take these Wall of Bones and you place a story with them. And we thought, well, what if we could create our own story of how these dinosaurs got here, so that when they come here, that the bones are fascinating by themselves, but it kind of has to do with like the Utah monolith kind of experience, right? Where the reason why that monolith became so popular is that, you know, there's this thing that doesn't belong here, but the story of how it got there was just so intriguing. And we kind of thought that was this kind of the same idea with the dinosaur bones is, you know, these dinosaur bones are fascinating, but like, how can we create a story behind it that will resonate? And so we were able to take that Wall of Bones, expand the world out to an epic degree of the entire area. We're not just confined to this one small space with bad lighting. And then we can create any set that we want with any lighting that we want and create that narrative. And then it all comes down to the conclusion on the Wall of Bones as this kind of culmination of the narrative. And so
I like it.
Yeah.
No, that's good stuff, James. And it really, that was the precipice that turned it into this multi-year campaign. I mean, we've been doing this campaign and iterations of this campaign now since 2015, right?
Yeah. Like I said, we started out with two characters, Vern and Al, and I should mention one's a pterodactyl and one's an Allosaurus. And typically in animation, there's kind of a trope or an archetype of characters where you have one, and I'm sure you've seen them, like one really smart character that's really small and he's the brains of the operation. And then you kind of have the larger goofy character that's not as bright, but provides a lot of comic relief. And so Vern is our really bright, smart character who acts almost as if a tour guide of the area. And then Al is kind of the comic relief to Vern. But we started off with them, and then it grew to four characters. And now we're at about nine characters.
And we're building an entire museum of animals or of dinosaurs, right?
Yeah, we have mammoths now. We have down to turtles. I mean, there's so many characters that we've built this entire world with characters now that I imagine it can only just get bigger and bigger, but we love it.
Awesome. Okay, so that was a great campaign and is a great campaign, and we're still iterating on that campaign. And it's been so good for Dinosaur Land, who has experienced incredible growth year over year over the last several years. Let's talk about another campaign that we actually had someone who saw our Vern and Al campaign or the Origin of Adventure campaign from Vernal and said, I got to have it, right? So let's talk about that other destination that has utilized these illustration and animation services.
Yeah. Madera County with Visit Yosemite. This has been an amazing project where they really wanted to stand out from the other gateways to Yosemite, because there are multiple gateways into Yosemite. And they wanted to really stand out from the other ones. And so one of the ways to do that is essentially do what others aren't. And nobody was doing a kind of an illustrated campaign. And they were also trying to appeal to that kind of family dynamic. And we essentially created a campaign where this road trip, so to say, and this welcoming committee, so that as you go into the gate, you're welcomed by these characters, these animated characters. And these characters represented a stop along the way as you go through this road trip through Yosemite. So it started with this character of this bear called Sierra that starts you in the town of Oakhurst, which is the town that brings you into Madera County. And then we culminate at the epic view of Tunnel View in Yosemite with the squirrel. And we created about, we started out with 6 characters. Now we're at 8. And we keep adding a character, I think, every year. And it's this awesome project where you get to really associate each part of the destination with a character. And so that when each person went to each spot of the destination, they could collect a trading card of that character. And then kids can collect all these trading cards and then put them on their fridges at home. And then we also created an animated video along with a children's book that's voiced and that children can watch and really develop a relationship with these spots along the way, so that when they do come, they already have a relationship with it, and they're excited to collect the trading card and kind of see that in real life. So it's been an extremely rewarding campaign.
Yeah, a lot of fun. And it's got to be rewarding to see these characters that you started with in your brain kind of come to life and actually, I mean, at one point you were even doing several variations of the voice and voicing different characters and using some of the technology tools at your fingertips to modify those voices into unique character voices. I mean, that's got to be so rewarding to watch those characters come to life.
No, you hit it right on the head, where I think what I love most about, especially this industry, is the ability to have an idea, and you take that idea to kind of experimenting with it, like, oh, what if we did this, right? What if we did that? And then seeing that idea mold into something tangible, and then eventually come to life, where you can literally see this character go from a concept to talking and moving on a screen or moving on a page. And it gives you a sense of just like you created something of value. You almost created life, so to say, as a weird way of saying it. But the term animation, when I always explain how animation is different than motion graphics, animation literally means bringing something to life. And Walt Disney's famous kind of mantra was the illusion of life. We want things to make it feel like they're alive. And so when you're creating something like that, you just kind of, it's extremely invigorating, because people will have emotional reactions to what you created that didn't exist like a couple of months ago. And that's fascinating. Yeah,
let's talk about that then, because it's such a unique component of the of all the tools available to you in marketing. Animation and illustration, super unique, right? Yeah. So I want to take it back now for the destinations that are listening. I think it's been a fascinating conversation so far. But as a destination, every destination is beautiful in its own right. You've got beautiful places to visit. You've got great dining. You've got all these different things in every destination. Why would a destination consider illustration and animation? When is that something that you kind of pull out of your playbook and say, hey, maybe this is the solution?
No, oh, I love it. Well, number one off the bat is if your brand or if your destination, if you're feeling that you're having a hard time standing out from the rest of the crowd, our mantra is do what everybody else is not doing. And so not a lot of people are doing illustration and animation. I mean, and you look
Why
at
is
the,
that?
Well, number one, it's I think from a face value, it's much more expensive to paint a picture than to take a photo of it, right?
Yep.
And you look at the campaigns like Oregon, or slightly exaggerated with Oregon, and they had an entire studio create that campaign. But what's awesome about what we do here at Relic is that we're able to create, I think, things that were usually associated with large budgets and animation and illustration just being off the table just because it's hard to afford it. We're able to create, I think, quality animation that people can actually afford just because of the system that we've built. So that's number two. If your budget is pulling you back, I think we've built a solid system that allows someone to actually put it on the table, which is exciting enough, because for a lot of people, it's just not even on the table. And then number three is animation has a weird way of just communicating this wonder to it, and this aspect of seeing the world with this magical feel to it. And so, I mean, you look at the old school Disney films, those hand-drawn Disney films, and there's this, even if you're, I mean, I go back now and I watch those and I'm instantly brought back to my childhood. And you almost see the world with this childlike wonder. And if you want to associate your destination with this aspect of wonder, illustration is a wonderful way to do that. So Yosemite was a perfect example to do that, because even anybody who walks in and drives through that tunnel in Yosemite, you're instantly hit with this sense of wonder and magic. And we've noticed in destinations, you're really not kind of selling a destination. You're selling an experience, magic, and wonder, right?
Right.
And so right. Illustration and animation is the perfect way that personifies it.
Yeah, there's a disclaimer that I always give when a destination wants to talk about illustration or explore the idea of using illustration. And what I say is usually there's a real story that comes along with it, right? Just like you mentioned with the Vernon Al campaign, we started with two dinosaurs, and now there's a smorgasbord of characters that have all kinds of different backstories. And I feel like if you're going to use and make the investment to use animation and illustration, it's probably not a, hey, let's try this for a year and see how it goes. We need to be prepared to commit to this storytelling way of handling your creative and letting that story build over time, as opposed to just, hey, let's do it for 1 year and maybe we'll do a different campaign next year. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And plus just simply animation illustration gives you things that just aren't possible with regular traditional photography and film. Like for Uinta County example, for example, we have an Allosaurus rowing a canoe. And if we were to try to do that through film or photography, that would almost be impossible, because you'd need a Hollywood size studio to pull that off with multiple visual effects artists, modelers, and everything. But with animation illustration, we're able to show an Allosaurus rafting down a river, and we're able to do it way easier than if we tried to do it through film. So practicality and a limitless options of what you're able to show is also an advantage too.
Yep. Not limited by photography, which a lot of destinations are. Like asset availability is so, I mean, you've got a lot of national parks where it's hard to get in there and shoot something. It's hard to get a permit to go shoot something in the national park.
Yeah.
But hey, with animation, you can shoot anything, right?
Oh yeah. To give you an example of that, drone shots, I think, are an essential element to a lot of destinations, of getting this awesome bird's eye view of cool destinations. But the problem is a lot of drones aren't even allowed in national parks, right?
Yep.
And so how do you get this epic cinematic shot, almost as if you see those movies of this beautiful helicopter shot opening up on the destination and then the scene? How do you get that without being able to fly a drone? And what we did with Uinta County is we opened up the entire shot, and with Madera County, we opened a beautiful drone shot, but it's not, we didn't use a drone. It's just all animated and illustrated. So there's things you're just able to get that under the restraints that wouldn't be possible otherwise.
Awesome. Kate, let's shift gears a little bit, James, because we got a lot I want to cover today.
Let's do it.
You also are kind of our in-house branding expert, for lack of a better way to describe it, for tourism destinations. And so I want to know, I mean, you've been doing this for a long time in tourism. What have you learned about building a destination brand?
Oh, well, brand
in 10 seconds or less.
Yeah. well, I can say truly branding a destination, it really has become something that I've really fallen in love with. And it really does give me a sense of meaning and worth. When I wake up in the morning, I'm super excited to work on these projects because I'm essentially telling people how to build a relationship with this destination. Right. And that's what I've really come to believe that branding is. is it's essentially you're building the foundation of a genuine and authentic relationship that people will have with these destinations. And so it's super rewarding from that point of view. But I've noticed that no matter where your brand is, if, like, for example, if your brand awareness, if you think not too many people know about your destination, or if you have a brand perception problem where you think your brand might be different than what you want it to be, no matter where you are on that spectrum, you can essentially become what you want to, what your brand wants to be. And we figured out a system how to do that, but it all comes down to building that relationship. We have a specific way of doing that, and that goes through our brand strategy guide. But man, that consistent and positive interaction with someone's brand will build a positive brand throughout the year. So, yeah.
Well, we've kind of built out a kind of a framework that we work within, and we call it brand therapy. Right.
Yeah.
And you really spearheaded that project for us. Tell me a little bit about what that process is, and why does a destination need brand therapy?
Yeah. So whenever we do the brand therapy process, I literally start out with the kind of the thought of why is branding important at all? Why can I just market my destination and see what comes from those? See what comes from that. And what we've noticed is that with tourism specifically, if you want people to come to your destination through your marketing efforts, you need to really check three things off of the box. Number one is you need to have that logical argument of why you should come there in the first place, right? You should come here because we have XYZ. And the argument really needs to be unique and compelling, because what we've seen is that every tourism destination has something worth visiting. So you've got to focus on what's unique and compelling. What makes something compelling is the emotional connection. And so what we realized through a lot of this process is that we are not robots, or humans are not robots, but we prioritize story and emotion when we're trying to make a message. And so that number two is that emotional connection that you need to really focus on. And then number three is trust. Our information doesn't come in and they don't just view it as plain information. They view information almost, it's important to view where that information is coming from. So if they trust the source, they're more likely to trust the message and act on it. For example, I don't know if CDs aren't a thing anymore, but when you build a relationship of trust with a band, a lot of people will buy the CD without even listening to it, right? Because they've built that trust over the years. And so same thing with Disneyland, where if you have built that trust with that brand, you'll go there kind of expecting what you've built that trust on. So we kind of preface that in the beginning, why this is important at all. And so we break down a brand strategy into three main parts. Number one is your brand core. And your brand core is essentially why you exist. It's why your destination is important. And keep in mind, this, we're trying to build a relationship here, right? And so you're telling a destination why you exist, other than kind of generating TRT tax or revenue, which is extremely important, but this needs to be for your target audience. And you need to communicate to them what your purpose is and why you're important. And so once you know your purpose, you know what kind of destination you want to be. And that's what we call your vision. How do you want your destination to be in 5 years? Because truth is, a lot of destinations change throughout the year. So we have to decide what we want to be for generations to come.
James, and if the destination doesn't change, the audience over time certainly changes.
Yeah, no, exactly. And so if you know who you want to be throughout the years, then we break that down into your mission. How do we do that? And then your values. What are those guiding principles that guide me along the way? And so to give you an example of this, you know, I use the prime example of Disney World because everybody, there's a good chance that everybody understands it. But, you know, if you market Disney World as kind of just lots of rides, fun rides. There's lots of cool places where you can buy food. You wouldn't have, I think, as much success, but really the core of everything that that Disney World does, even down to the customer interaction that they have with people, is the Disney magic, right? That's the core of their brand. They want people to feel that. That's what, and they think that's important because imagination is core to being a human being. And so that core to everything that they do, down to the person who sells the churros, down to the person who's waiting in line, down to the parades, you feel that core wherever you go. So that hope that example kind of gives people a good way to wrap their head around that.
Yeah, absolutely. I want you to tell me, though, I'm going to push you a little bit. Tell me a destination that's doing it right. Not one we've done.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I love is the branding of Oregon, the Travel Oregon campaign, because from a branding perspective, their target audience was really, they wanted to attract people who really have that sense of seeing the world in a really creative or an exaggerated way, and are really just kind of open to new experiences and new ways to see the world. And one way that they did that is that they used that animated campaign with slightly exaggerated, kind of making sure that we value seeing the world in a new way and in a different way and in an exaggerated way, right? In an imaginative way, the way a child would. We value that. And we're going to use that in all of our marketing so that when you come here, you'll see it when you interact with people. And Oregon really does live up to that brand, I think, just of being just this place of creativity and seeing Portland's entire tagline is keep Portland weird, right?
Right.
I think they stayed perfectly on brand. If that's the core of their brand, it's just like weird. We want to stay weird. and they stick to it. I think their marketing with that that branding kept it there. So yeah.
Well, and that's a great example of the story they're telling actually matches the experience when people get there. And that's why it's an effective brand. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
James, we've had a lot of fun today, but I want to boil it down and I don't want you to look at this through a narrow lens, right? Of just design or creative or branding. I want you to tell me over the course of time, as you've been doing what you're doing, what do you feel like is the most important piece of advice that you could give a destination today?
Oh my gosh. Well, here's what it breaks down to. I think you really need to focus on the emotional aspect of things, because if you market yourself as just a list of features as a destination, it's going to be hard to resonate. And we are emotional and visual beings, and we're storytellers. And to give you an example of this is that people will always remember a story and a narrative more than a list of facts or a list of features. So if you can emotionally resonate with someone on a really authentic and genuine level, your destination will always, always stay in people's minds more than if you're trying to just kind of show what you have. So connect on an emotional level is what I can say.
Great advice, James. Great advice. Hey, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing some of your knowledge with our audience today.
No, I appreciate it, Adam. It was a pleasure. Yeah.
Tell me how people can find you if they want to ask you more questions specifically about some of the campaigns that you've done or branding questions. How can people get a hold of you?
Yeah, anybody can find me at james@relicagency.com, and feel free to send me an email and ask any question you want. I love talking about this stuff. It really does give me a sense of meaning, and I love it. So feel free to give me an email.
Great. Well, thanks again, James. Appreciate having you on the show.
Great. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, everyone, this has been another great episode of the Destination Marketing Podcast. As I always say, if you enjoyed today's content, please make sure to leave us a rating or a review. Otherwise, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.